At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Rugby Rant. I'm the big guy, Scott Ferrar. That's Rob the Hammer, Hammerschmidt. And with us, Jacob Schaefer, New England superfan, part of the crew. I'm glad he's back with us. And, before we get any further, let me just say, Hammer.
We're just lucky he wanted to come back after the draft show. Like, he could have said, you know what? You guys are a bunch of chuckleheads. I'm out.
Yeah, you know who produced the draft show?
Me.
Exactly. So I want to give a quick shout out to the Hammer. My boy held it down the past month or two while I was taking care of some business. So I really appreciate all the work Hammer put into the shows and all the interviews, especially the live draft show, which is something that I'll toot my own horn. It was my baby when we first started. I really wanted to do a live draft show, and we've done it now for 4 years, I think.
Yeah.
And I was so glad that Hammer could produce it and host it at the same time.
And not totally so fuck it up.
Yeah, listen, it was a great – listen, I think we have almost 30,000 views on that bad boy. So,
no kidding.
It was really good content. And now we have a bunch of competition because I think a bunch of other shows started to do their live draft show as well. Like, it's a brand new thing. Like, we haven't been doing
it. Right. Well, what was cool is when we were on, Jacob, I don't know if you were paying attention to that, but, we had like 180, 185 people watching live, which I don't know that we've had a live show reach that level yet, and it doesn't seem like that much. On the other hand, when you compare it to, what we've done in the past, it was exciting for me just to see that many people were watching it as they were watching the draft itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at the live numbers. I had too much stuff on my screen, so that's really cool to hear.
It was great. And again, just thank you boys for being a part of our 2024 draft coverage. Really, it's something that I think moving forward and it's probably a rant in itself about the coverage this year that the MLR put out for the draft.
Shout out to Rick Collins because he wants to bite at that apple. But I want to throw a shout out to Tim Brown, to Alec McDonnell, and of course, James Dealey. For jumping in. It made it a lot of fun.
Yep. And thank you to all the GMs, Tom Kinley, James English, Fitz,
and Lucas, Coccarelli.
Yes. No.
Coccarelli. No. Coccarelli. Yeah.
There you Coccarelli. Go.
Sorry.
For sharing their perspective, and giving us some content there. So, guys, it's, I'm glad to be back. In the time that I was working, away from the show, I was doing show work. Our website, The Rugby Rant, is now live. We're going to be doing blog posts. You can see video clips, full video, full audio of the podcast. Episode 184 here. Jacob might be joining the crew. Right now it's me, Hammer, and a newcomer, Pierce LeBon, who will be doing some stuff. And right now, if you want to check out what we're talking about, the big guy just put out his blog for a dedicated fifth official, which would just be working on the scrum. And it's something that we've talked about on the rant before, but I want to kind of elaborate on exactly what I was talking about. Rob did a great blog article about Regulation 8 prior to the draft that really explained the differences between NCR and Division 1 and all that. So really looking forward to some of the content coming out.
Yeah, and I have a new one. It's entitled For the Love of God. and you can check it out when it comes out this week, just to get an idea of what I'm ranting about in this one, but it should be pretty interesting.
And to jump on Jacob one more time, me and him were talking prior to the show, and I actually have a blog post coming out tomorrow that has nothing to do with rugby whatsoever. But because I own the website, I decided, fuck it, I'm going to put it out. So Hammer, yeah, you're just gonna have to deal with it at this point. So before we get into the rant, let's talk about Around the Pitch. Jacob, you're up.
All right. Level 3 coaches. If you got your level 3 coaching certification, Women's Elite Rugby put out, believe it was today, a couple hours ago, put out a post saying, hey, they're hiring for all 6 franchises. They're looking for head coaching positions, assistant coaching positions. Applications are open for 13 more days, about 2 weeks. If you want to coach for a pro rugby team, they're out there looking for you.
Awesome. I mean, you know, shout out to our boy, Rick Collins. Just got his level 1 cert. So, you know, this is how we move forward, right? In rugby, we talk about, you know, not just player pool, we talk about coaching pool, specifically American rugby coaching pool. So, shout out to people who are moving forward. And if you're looking for a job in women's league rugby, there you have it.
The guy that comes to mind is TJ, TJ, our friend, Bonus Point Podcast. He is super knowledgeable, one hell of a coach, and he really enjoys, you know, investing in the women's game and developing young female athletes out west.
And I believe he transitioned out of his Long Beach State position to give an assistant coach a shot at head coach. So he might be available. But Hammer, what do you got for Around the Pitch?
Oh, man. Well, I got 2 quick things I'm going to throw at you. 1 local, 1 national. We'll start at the micro level, local. A couple of weeks ago, August 17th, in preseason warm-up, club, men's club, and women's club matches, the 2024 version of the Triangle Tour took place. And I was a big shout out to my guys here at the Chicago Blaze Rugby Club, my home club. Every year up until COVID for a couple of years, they did a 3-year rotation where one of 3 rugby clubs would host the event. And the 3 clubs are Wisconsin RFC and the Assassins RFC from the Winnipeg area, and of course, Chicago Blaze. And it's a, you know, every 3 years it comes home, but you got to travel the other 2. And of course, this year it was in Chicago here at the Pete Thornley Field, Chicago Blaze Rugby Club. Like I said, those 3 teams played round robin. It's really a great social event. It, you know, I don't know that clubs are doing enough tours these days. And this really harkens back to the days when clubs took that early season tour to get some matches in before they began league play. I love it. The thing at the national level, which was pretty cool, the bronze medal women in 7s just got done with their campaign. Huge shout out to them. Love what Alona Mara is doing. But they're not stopping. They are ready to build up and capitalize on what they've done thus far as they're already preparing for 2028 in LA, September 2nd through the 7th in Chula Vista. 25 women were brought into camp to vie for spots in the full-time residency program. 12 of the 20 of them were invited based upon Club 7's performance in Madison just a few weeks back. Really cool to see them reloading. I love it. I am so happy that the ladies are getting their due. It was freaking amazing to see them represent and get a lot of attention in the general sporting landscape. And congratulations to Alona Mar, who looks stunning in the Sports Illustrated issue.
Hey, I'm wearing the bronze medal USA Rugby shirt.
Who'd you get on back? Who'd you get on back?
Well, I got 4, so I got a little,
Mrs. Big Guy's not going to be happy when she gets that.
No, that bill, she's going to be pissed off. But I got who'd I get? I got Alona Mar. I got Alev Kelter.
There you go.
I got Sammy? Alina Olsen, and I got Nia Tapper. You know, Nia retiring.
I know you guys go
my favorite, and you know she's one of my favorites. And Alina Olsen is a Michigan alum. Go Blue. So you know, I had to rock out with my Michigan people. Yeah. You know, 11 is just a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I think, you know, if she was a little more outspoken on social media, she'd be just as big as Alona. But she does her talking on the field, so I guess I'm up.
Yeah. I got Alona, so I'm loving that one.
That's great. So, guys, speaking of medals, our USA Wheelchair Olympic rugby team, not bad getting a silver medal. Couldn't get over the hump of losing to Japan again. Unfortunately, we lost 48-41 in the gold medal game. And it was a, you know, disappointing because we're perennially up there for the gold medal, whether it's the World Championships or the Paralympics. But, you know, nonetheless, we continue our medal streak, which I believe is at 6. And shout out to Steve Aoki, one of the team captains. He is actually tied now for most Paralympic wheelchair rugby medals with, I believe, Garrett Hinkler from Canada with 4. So if Steve is on the team in 4 years and we medal, he will singularly have that title of most wheelchair rugby medals in the Paralympics. You guys know I love the sport. You know, guys know I had a friend in the sport. I played for Team USA and won a couple medals. It's really glad to see this sport come to the Olympics and be out there. It was on Peacock. It was on USA. They were getting a broad range of exposure to this sport, and it was really good to see. And listen, we got World Championships in a year. We have, you know, again, another Paralympics in 4 years. So get ready, baby.
Time to reload
and looking at it. Oh, and I forgot to talk about Sarah Adams. Sarah Adams becomes the first woman to medal for USA Wheelchair Rugby. Shout out to Sarah. She also happened to score the first try of the actual Olympics campaign with a great pass from Steve Aoki. So you know, it's one of those things where I think it all fell into place. She's a great player for a reason, and it showed. Anyway, guys, we're here to recap an Eagles win against Rugby Canada. What do we say every time we play Canada, boys? A, B, C. Always beat Canada. And that doesn't mean we don't love our brothers and sisters up in the Great White North, but the rivalry is intense, especially in this sport. It's intense in wheelchair rugby. That was the first match was USA-Canada, and it came down to the wire. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what type of rugby we're playing. We have that. And the Pacific Nations Cup is one of those things that allows us to bring that brand of fun and you know, turmoil and all that fun stuff we have with Rugby Canada to the forefront.
Well, let's be honest. If there's a rivalry, then that means that there's something to play for, that there's something to get excited about, and there's something that allows both ships to raise the tide in, you know, American rugby landscape. And I'm talking about North and South American combined. And that's what we need in order to qualify for 2027. We've got to challenge one another to take it to a next level so we can both be in that campaign. And we've got to prepare as a nation for 2031.
Absolutely. Moonshot 2031, baby. You love to see it. But before we get into nitty gritty, let's show a little bit of TV production magic here. So real quick, just to recap, we played Rugby Canada. We opened up against Rugby Canada in the Pacific Nations Cup. Rugby Canada, unfortunately, already had a loss against Japan in their first match. But coming in, we were playing Canada in L.A., Carson, California. Didn't like the start time. I was already in bed. That's late for the big guy. I got to watch replay. But understandable, you know, you want to be in prime time on the West Coast and the Midwest. So understandable, 9 o'clock start time on Saturday. And Gianluca Gnecchi was the person in the middle. And, you know, it was with the way Canada played against Japan and they looked so disheveled and, us coming off of a performance against Scotland that was, had left some fans, upset. Yeah, it's one of those things where, I think this is a little bit refreshing. This final score being 28-15, I do wish it would have been a little more of a romp. But first match for us, the guys are off an MLR campaign, a bunch of them. We got a bunch of players in the player pool. And now you're seeing the player pool, but before we get to Jacob to give his thoughts, now you're seeing a player pool when they give you the link to the player pool. They're telling you these guys are injured. They would have been in the player pool. Or these guys have chosen not to be selected, but they would have been in the player pool for a spot. And I think that's a little more clarity and upfrontness than we've had in the past. But Rob, we're going to let Jacob roll with his thoughts on this match.
100%.
Yeah, well, I definitely appreciate the clarity. And there was a long, long list of guys who weren't available for one reason or another that was a little bit disappointing, but you play with the team you have, and that's what it was. Anyone who knows me knows how critical I am of Rugby Canada. I'm a Free Jacks fan. I know a lot of these guys. And if you've heard me talk on, I am very, very, very critical about Canada because I know what these guys are capable of. It doesn't tend to translate. But I actually have to give them props before I talk about the U.S. because Canada's game plan was a lot better than it had been. I routinely criticize their offense, especially as being one-dimensional. I've accused Kingsley Jones of running a D2 college offense at the international level before, but what you saw out of Canada on Saturday was very, very good, very high level rugby, especially their opening try there with the line out set up move, fake the maul, ball out wide, back inside for the line break. They were pulling down in their bag of tricks. They really brought it out to us. It was more than you've seen them play against Romania, more than you saw them bring against Scotland. So this one, they clearly had some things stashed back for us that we had to handle, which I appreciate seeing that out of them. And then on the U.S. side, the loss to Romania was brutal. Like, there's no other way to put it. It was a terrible, terrible game to watch as a fan. And then you come to Scotland, you don't expect much out of Scotland. Out of the game with Scotland, I should say. You expected a lot out of Scotland. And, you end up walking out 7 points. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, but you're still not feeling great about it. It more is just a meh. And then coming into this game, there's stakes to play for. You win this game, you get an extra game against a high level opponent. You're not playing down in the playoffs. You get a shot, maybe, you play Japan now, you maybe get a shot at Fiji. It's an important experience level. And to come in and for the U.S. to play the way they did, they played in a way that fixed a lot of the issues that we had been seeing. They played in a way that players managed to elevate themselves individually, which helped elevate the team. And it wasn't fantastic. They didn't blow you away. They didn't run Canada off the field, which if you had seen Canada's recent results, you would have hoped that they ran Canada off the field. But it was enough that you can look at that team. You can say, okay, I see the vision. I see where it's coming in. Corey Daniel had a fantastic night. Mitch Wilson, who was under heavy, heavy pressure against Romania and Scotland, he stepped up against Canada, had a fantastic night. And Connor Mooneyham continues to just emerge as a star winger. Over the injury problem, he's really coming into his own. So there are reasons to be cautiously optimistic against Japan, which is more than I would have said about this game last week when I was legitimately worried that we would lose badly to Canada.
Well, you talk about Mitch Wilson. I thought Mitch Wilson played extremely well in the Romania game, and he was kind of hampered in the Scotland game. I was there, and honestly, just the weather wasn't going to be good for any of the backs playing on that pitch, regardless of what team they were playing for. But I thought Mitch Wilson played extremely well against Romania, even though it wasn't the outcome we wanted. But yeah, I think you're right. It's Canada definitely played a lot better against us, and I think it has something to do with the juice out playing us, that rivalry. And again, they had the luxury of playing Japan prior, a week prior, so they got a little bit more experience coming together and playing together than they did. Cameron, what are your thoughts?
So first of all, kudos to Carts. Luke Carty had a fabulous game, man of the match, of course, but I think he's undervalued by a lot of folks out there. I think he was undervalued for a good portion of the season in the MLR season. his vision, his tactical ability, the variety of tricks in his bag are outstanding. And while Kartz is not one of those explosive guys that you expect to make a huge break, he does it enough and finds spots to do it to keep the defense honest. And that's what I love about him. But ultimately, beautiful vision, that awesome chip and chase led to the Mitch Wilson try, an attempted chip out wide on a wiper to get Mooneyham involved that just was out of Mooneyham's fingertips. So a fabulous game by him. My concern in his game right now is he's, he missed two conversions, and I'm a little concerned that we need a higher strike rate there from whoever's taking those kicks off the tee against a team like Japan. We've got to have a fabulous game there. And that's perhaps where, at least in the past, AJ has set himself ahead of Kartz. I thought we played well in the lineout. That was one of the strengths of our game. There were a few times which I really thought our scrum was solid, but there were a few points, in particular in the second half. Sears Drew got the better of us, and we gave away a few scrum penalties, which is a bit of a concern. We know Jaman's going to be very clinical, and they're going to tighten things up. Speaking of tightening things up, I'm worried about our handling. You know, this is like the third game on the hoof. We've had some handling errors, and they've really impacted our ability to play and put pressure on the opposition. A couple of times it almost proved costly if it weren't for Canada's mistakes themselves. And then what I believe to be a too quick to put an end to advantage that could have been a Lucas Rum ball try. Penalties, we got to take care of these. I really thought we were doomed in the first half as soon as Nelson put that, took the points just outside of the or maybe it was just inside the halfway mark and slotted it. It kind of sends the message, hey, you know, if you make mistakes inside your half, we're going to cut you down. And that's something we got to clean up. We just got to be more careful about the penalties we make. Canada, you hit the nail on the head there, Jacob. They had a really nice try with Nick Benn. Try was a nice inside ball of a good, nice set piece play, but 81% on the lineouts was awful. And they had a lot of overthrows and it's a huge concern. They should be better than that with that lineup that they have. I expected more from that, quite frankly, in spite of the fact that not having, as many penalties, I mean, the two yellow cards were horrific and they, I think they proved to be a costly part of the game. Although the U.S. was only able to capitalize on one of those two as far as points. We need to clean things up against Japan, but I'll talk about Japan in a little bit.
So you brought up some stats. So I can't find the handling errors, but you talked about the lineouts. And while Canada won more lineouts than we did, our success rate was actually better by 12%. And again, scrums, we won 8-5. We won all of our scrums. Canada won all of their scrums, to be quite honest. Possession, believe it or not, was 50-50 entire match. Mm-hmm. Which, I think goes to show you that, again, Canada came to play. But it's one of those things where, like, again, I'm not so sure I like the strategy we're on when we talk about kicking. So let me give you guys some stats on the kicking. So we kicked – I had it here. We had 27 kicks in play. We kicked from the hand 795 meters. 17 of those were into touch. We retained four of those kicks into our possession, and we collected 9 from Canada's 19 kicks in play. The thing I get weary on is when we kick well, we do well. When we don't kick well, it's like all hope is lost, and we don't know how to not make adjustments to not kick. So I don't want us to get into the habit of relying on the kick is something that we're always going to do because we're going to have to make these adjustments to play better. And again, I'll go back to this saying this a million times. I hope Scott Lawrence hears me and goes, that's a great idea. Picking goes for forwards, not having forward pods just a meter or two behind the game line, flat footed. That's the kind of things we need to do to get momentum, especially when those kicks aren't working. Talked about we were 1-for-4 for conversions, but we were 2-for-2 for penalty goals. But leaving the points in play on the kick, while we left them out there, I would say when we talk about Japan, I'd rather have Cardi than McGinty. I think he put the ball in play better to get us to score some of those tries. Sometimes, and I think they key on McGinty a little bit too much, and it gets him. They're keen on some of the things he's doing to get the ball out, and it's disrupting some of his passes. So while he's great with the leg, better than Cardi, I think Cardi's a little more dynamic with the ball in hand to get the ball out, get us what we need to do on the try side, and we're going to need that for our play against Japan. Ruck success rate 93% for U.S., 95% for Canada. Malls won 5-9. Canada outbeat us there. Discipline. We talked about it. Too many penalties. Out of our 11 penalties, 5 were conceded in our own half, and that just can't be. So 50%, we're a little bit more than 50% were conceded in their territory, but 5% are conceded in our territory. And you make a mistake like that against Japan or Fiji, and you're talking about what could be the end of the match essentially if you continue to make those mistakes. The defense, 162 tackles for Team USA, only 16 missed versus Canada's 120 tackles. They missed 14. Turnovers, we had more turnovers, 8-3. And if you're looking at the attack, meters gained just about the same, carries just about the same, defenders beating just about the same, clean breaks just about the same, passes, USA. Eagles, 157 passes versus Rugby Canada's 130. Offloads were the same. Turnovers conceded. USA on attack conceded less turnovers than Canada. And just like anything we really talk about, turnovers are the name of the game. And before we go on to our final comments about this match, I'm going to say, Chris Mattina, you told me you owe me something, a little bit of something from one of these matches. So I'm going to hold you to it. I'm going to clip this, and I'm going to just send it to you constantly. Yeah. So, guys, if you guys want to talk, give us some final thoughts about the game.
So there are two things. I'm glad you brought up penalties again, because one of the things that's interesting is, and it was almost a killer, was there were two instances where we had two penalties in a row, right? So you give away or concede a penalty, when you're playing in there, and in your red zone, right? You make a mistake, you commit a penalty, but then you commit another penalty again, perhaps in a line out or otherwise, and then you give them a shot at putting that ball in the corner within that 22 area, perhaps even a little closer to the try line, and that's a killer. You just can't commit those penalties twice in a row. Here's one of the questions I have for both of you guys. Scott mentioned it, defense. You talked about tackles. What did you guys think about the U.S. defense on the evening?
Jake?
On the whole, I liked it, but there were moments where I saw the same problems poking up again and again. And one of those was the try, the Nick Benn try, where you could say, "Oh, it was a really nice lineout move." But at the same time, if you don't let yourself draw into that maul, if JP Smith comes out a little more, you could say he was playing tight to that maul. If he comes up, he can plug that gap. Nick Benn's not getting through. He decides he's going to stick by the maul, watch for the pick from the back of the maul. And it's little things like that where you see, slight lapses. They weren't getting gashed. They weren't getting caught out by the back inside ball that much. But you could see just lapses where a space opens up just a little bit too much, which was strange, especially when Canada wasn't getting much go forward with the boot. So you could afford to fill those gaps, but they were just letting them peek open every once in a while. And I'm not really understand why, because the threats weren't really there for that to happen. But, it was – on the night, you look at it and you're like, okay, we're making our tackles, with 162 tackles, only 16 missed. Okay, we're making our tackles. But at the same time, in order to make a tackle attempt, you have to be in the gap. And sometimes they just weren't in the gap where they needed to be. For no reason, they weren't pulled out of position. They just went out of position. And I don't really understand where the disconnect is happening, but it's been happening with this group. It's been happening since the Romania game where someone just misses their mark and the gap is there. It's either there on the inside, it's there on the outside. It doesn't matter. The gap opens up and someone finds a way to hit it.
And I want to expand on what Jake's talking about. I think if you look at the roster, the lineup that Rugby Canada had, Andrew Coe at fullback, he's the most versatile guy on the wing or as a center. when it comes to counter kicking and putting pressure when you kick downfield, right? And him at fullback, the guy kicking the ball, that pressure's not there because he can't run full speed, right? He has to think about the kick first besides taking off, which he's shown, you know, great prowess in the MLR and for Rugby Canada usually when he's in that position. So Ben Lesage doesn't give you the same pressure on the ball in those places. So you have Lesage there at the 13 and Andrew Coe at the 15. You're right. Why are you so worried about the kick when the pressure from the kick isn't going to be as great because the guy most likely kicking it is their best pressure guy and he's not going to get down there as quick? So that's a question of on the field having some awareness of how it's going to translate it. And I could see, you know, first 20 minutes you get in and you're thinking about the kick, but by the second half, you know, if their kick is ineffective, it's not going to all of a sudden be effective. You're better off tightening up your defense. I do think, you know, the tackle stats always a red herring. Cause my point to that would be any team that's down is going to should have the ball in hand on most of their possessions. So that means there's going to be more tackles. They're going to be a little more conservative with the line play. So that means they're going to have quicker phases, which are going to have more tackles. You know what I mean? So I don't think the tackle count being, you know, 40 tackles higher for the U.S. versus Rugby Canada is as much as a great defensive play as much as it was just situational and how Rugby Canada played. And that doesn't mean, you know, the tackles weren't good. I mean, out of 160 tackles, you missed 16. I'll take that. You know what I mean? That's not crazy. But I think on the defensive side, it's those little breakdowns that we're not seeing get fixed. And you play a team like Fiji and those little slivers go all the way.
So I'm going to put you guys on the spot then for my next question. Okay. As good a night as Mitch Wilson had, great effort on this try, caught that ball on a knockdown, if you can call it a knockdown, when he caught it between his knees, great hands, put pressure on the opposition, right? Is he the answer at fullback for the United States, at least for the near future?
I'll defer to Jake first.
No pressure, Jake.
For the near future, I'd say, yeah, I don't really see anyone coming to challenge him. You know, Ran Santos may be making his way through the U-20s, but he's still got a couple years before he gets there. And thing with Mitch Wilson, he's a little undersized. You know, he plays on the wing at club level, so he's got mm-hmm. to transition back to fullback every single time for international duty. And it shows. He has weaknesses in his fullback game. That being said, is there really anyone better that could be wearing that 15 shirt right now?
Right. And that's what I'm getting at, right, is I don't know that we found an answer, you know, a true answer that spot. As you said, Wilson's a quality winger. But, you know, at fullback, it's not his natural position. I would have liked to seen if Matina was fully back to his full capacity, if he would step into that position well, because we know he has a vision. We know he can tactically kick pretty well. Until he's back to match fitness, you know, we're kind of stuck on alerts here as we go into Japan.
And that's what I would say. You know, if he was 100%, I would start Matina at 15 and Mitch Wilson at 14, to be quite honest, because again, Mitch Wilson is that Andrew Coe style player for us when the kicks are going down. And we know Chris Matina is, you know, has the boot to kick tactically, which is a different skill set than kicking for goal. And don't get me wrong, Chris Matina can kick for goal.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He has a great leg and he can chip shot some stuff from outside that I'm like, woof, you know, like a lot of guys can't do that. But I think his best attribute is kicking in game with the ball in hand and, you know, looking for those tackle spots and also deciding when not to kick. And that's what we were talking about before, right? You know, not always just relying on the kick. You know, he will make a move. Is he the best with the ball in hand? No, but he's a safe option to at least bring the ball forward, start a new phase, reset the ball, get going. So that's what I would like to see. But again, you know, it's a game of attrition. And unfortunately, you know, his campaign, the MLR was cut so short, but he was able to come back and kind of put his minutes in. But, it, you know, I think, you know, it's unfortunate because I think this Pacific Nations Cup was going to be like his coming out party, to be quite honest, if he was 100%, because I think he definitely would have been getting more playing time at that 15. So, all right, guys, we're gonna talk about USA versus Japan. Is there anything you guys want to talk about real quick before we get into actual, you know, gameplay on this preview? Any lineup changes you think we might see? Again, we're recording this on Tuesday the 3rd. Lineups haven't come out yet.
Well, I don't know. I liked what we did in the front row in the first half. I thought we battled in the scrum. I thought we did, you know, our lineouts were strong. I thought our second row options were really nice. Of course, Greg Peterson as captain. You can't teach 6'8", and you can't teach the skill set that he brings to the table. Winning lineout, he's doing a great job leading the boys. Back row, I thought we were tough. I mean, I don't know you,
dude. That back row of Patty Ryan,
Corey Daniel,
Daniel Schultz. There we go, and Jamma. I mean, the game against Romania and Scotland, Jamma and Patty Ryan were just off the chain. Whether it was
bringing the physicality,
that's a back row that likes to hit.
Yeah. And Jamma, it seems like it's the guy who's copping around the breakdown, you know, and mm-hmm. you rarely have issues copping around the breakdown. So
he just needs to secure a bit more, a secure ball a bit more when he's got it in hand. But man, he is a freight train looking to run somebody over every time he comes with a full head of steam, you know. When he's kind of sitting in that pocket on occasion, the ball comes through him from a kick. So I don't know that I'm changing a whole lot. I might rotate that front row just a little, get a little bit different combination against Japan, just to see, to get that right combination, you know, throughout the game. So you get, you know, a solid front row from 0 to 80 minutes. I'm not sure I love J.P. Smith as a player for Seattle. I'm not sure that he's my first choice nine. I would like to see Ethan McVay get a shot. And part of that's because we're going to need quick ruck ball. We're going to need quick ruck speed. And I think McVay has got that.
I would say against Japan, I would stick with J.P. Smith. Against Fiji, I would go with McVay. I think Japan does a better job of disrupting nines at the breakdown than Fiji does. Fiji kind of doesn't really worry about what's happening at the breakdown as far as disruption. Once the ball is won for possession, they kind of, their defenses kind of back off and run their line. Japan does a little more to disrupt. In my opinion, J.P. Smith having a little bit more, a lot more. Experience, I think, helps you in that particular thing. But, you know, do I think McVay can come in at 60 minutes? Absolutely. Do I think he could start against Fiji? Absolutely. I would like to see Sean McNulty maybe start against Japan. You know, he was a debutant, but he's been around the MLR playing hooker. You know, he knows a lot of the guys. You know, played for New England, Rugby New York, Miami. You know, he's played a lot of minutes professionally. Just because he was a debutant against the Eagles doesn't mean he doesn't have a lot of experience. So I kind of like to see him get a start, to be quite honest, just to build up some minutes in this Pacific Nations Cup. What about you, Jake? You think any lineup changes?
Actually, one lineup choice that I wish stays the same. I want to see Jason Dam again. Yeah, mm-hmm. He wasn't. I don't believe he started in either July test. And he was in the reserves, but he didn't get the start in either of them.
I'm not sure if he was 100%.
Right.
He might not have been, but yeah. He was the person I was clamoring to see what he can do at that level, because he was so good this year for LA.
And, would you put him at second row, Jacob? Or would you put him at back row and maybe, you know, bring out Daniel and go with the trio of, you know, Schultz at eight, and on the blind go with Patty Ryan, and then go with somebody like Dam at yeah, I don't know, put Patty Ryan actually at open side and go with Dam at six.
That's an option, but I wouldn't want to lose Corey Daniel either.
Yeah.
He is a tackling machine. He's so good. We talked about the physicality that he brings. He doesn't miss when he marks his man. So I would like to get both of them on the pitch, and damn it, 4 or 5 and Daniel's there at 7. That's the way to do it. I really liked a bit of new faces in there with Dan and Daniel and McVee coming off the bench. I like the starting to the slow transition to maybe get, you know, not just the guys we have ready to go, but guys who haven't been at this level start breaking them in. And I think Corey Daniels especially broke in very well last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, had he been healthy, Connor Buckley, you know, him and McVay would probably be fighting for that time. And again, they both have, I think they'll be a good duo in the future because they can kind of play off each other in their play styles, which is what you really want, right? Depending on the situation. Guys, can we, before we get into what we think is going to happen, can we talk about the lack of locks we have? True size locks? You know, that's a big concern. They're all old. Big concern. No offense to Greg and all these guys. And you know, Nate Brakely retired. And you know, you can't teach height. The pool doesn't seem like we have full size locks.
No, and I think a problem is that anybody with athleticism and height isn't playing rugby. They're going to play basketball.
Are playing football, and you can poach those guys. You can poach those basketball players that have played football and basketball before. So it's there. My question, I mean, let's look at the Alev Kelter story. She tried out for Team USA Hockey. She didn't make it, and somebody saw her at the Olympic Training Center and gave her a call and said, have you tried to play rugby before? Fucking Scott Lawrence should be at the Olympic Training Center looking for tall motherfuckers, man.
Yeah, they're on the basketball court and they're playing in the NBA. I think you can go to college football. You can find guys at Division I that aren't playing in the NFL. You can find guys at Division II that still want to play competitively, and you can, you know, bring them into the fold. But it takes time to develop them except second row. And I think the complexities of the line out really make it difficult for a guy to, you know, to really be trained, be brought into that and play at that level and be able to effectively, you know, navigate a line out.
And I mean, William
Wenspack is a guy, at 6'6 can play in there. But, you know, it's taken him years to get to the point where he's been invited to an Eagles camp. And it's only this year that he's really started to manage the line out when he was forced to, because, you know, the line out master, you know, Cam Dolan was out. So here's the thing.
They don't necessarily have to master the calling of the line out and all that. You have other veteran players who can do that. You teach him the jump, you teach him the scrum, everything else will fall into place, especially if they know football, they already know how to tackle, you know, they ball in hand, depending on what position they were playing. That's why I think basketball, you know, has a smaller percentage of players playing pro, G League, even in Europe. And I think you want to even look at basketball players more so than football players for locks and just cherry pick 3 or 4 guys. But I think it's a lot easier, you know, on the scrum side, it's a lot easier, right? We're not talking about all the dark arts of the scrum of twisting and turning and this and that and your first step and your first contact. You know, you butt sniffers there in the second row, engage and push and make sure your shoulder's in the right place, right? And if your shoulder's not in the right place, the prop is going to let you know. And I'm not minimizing the work that's done in the scrum for locks, but my point being, it's not as tactical as much as it's structure, right? So that should be an easy thing that you can transition. And then as far as the line out itself, you know, it's just the nuance of getting repetitions and even play calling. Most guys who play basketball or football, plays are called. They draw plays on the fly and run it. So I think can be a transition for those crossover athletes, specifically for the lock position. So me and Hammer agreeing to disagree on this one, but so guys,
yes, we will.
We'll start with Jake. Jake, how do you think this match on Saturday is going to go down?
That's a really good question, because it could go down a couple of different ways. You know, this Japan team, they're a good team. They're not the team that beat the Springboks. but they're still a very good Japan side, and they proved that, and they hung 8 tries on Canada. You know, I'm not saying, oh, we're going to go out there and upset Japan, beat down Eddie Jones's Brave Blossoms or anything like that. But I think you can get a success in a loss out of this game. And because that, I think there's a couple scenarios where maybe you lose by 2 or 3 possessions where you say, wow, that got away from us late, but we were right there. And that's what I'm expecting to see, because I think there's going to be, just like they targeted against Canada, there's going to be targeting a lot of switchbacks, a lot of wide ball, a lot of moving parts. But if the defense is as good as it was against Canada, like we said, there were defensive lapses, but Canada largely capitalized on those lapses, and there weren't that many of them to capitalize on. You know, if you give Japan that many opportunities, they're going to take them and they're going to score points. But if you can keep that amount of opportunities as low as you did against Canada, you know, maybe go from 7 or 8 just open gaps down to 6 or 7, 5 or 6, you're really going to be able to put yourself into a position where Japan isn't running away from you. And I think that should be the goal, is you can hang with Japan this game. You're probably not going to beat them, but you can keep them close, and you can take away a win in a loss against Japan by you know, how you play against them. Can you keep it a good game, a solid match? Because that's something they couldn't do against Scotland. If you can do it against Tier 1 Japan, you're in good shape.
Hammer, thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, if one word defines Japan for me, it's clinical. It's almost like they bring the Japanese culture into their style of playing rugby. They're clinical, they're efficient, they do a lot of things really well, and they are, you know, they're like a samurai. They will slice you to death and carve you up if you're not tight in all that you do. One of the things that I noticed is that there is amazingly quick ruck speed. They get to the breakdown and they redistribute that ball. And it's difficult to defend against if you're not fit and ready to get back on that defensive line, and if your defensive structures aren't in place. And Jake alluded to that. One of the things I also noticed that they attack very flat to the line. So quick ruck speed can really close down the passing lanes and passing options, and you can stop that wide ball. And notice, like, the United States doing this against Canada, they're playing that umbrella defense, right? You got to be wary of that 50-22 now, so your wings aren't coming up real fast. What your centers are doing is closing down that line speed much faster than the rest of the back line, and what that does is shuts off the valve to allow that ball to go out wide, and it opens up opportunities. You know, if they do try to go wide to steal that ball. So you've got to have quick line speed. They have a very good and very well organized 1-3-3-1 style of attack. And that ball can be popped out very, very quickly out of the back. And then they get that continuity of play, and that's how they get the ball wide. So the bottom line is, as Jake said, the U.S. has got to be on their game in defense. You know, if you can slow down that ruck just a little bit, you know, to get yourself organized on defense, you know, if you can attack that gain line and put them back behind it with your tackles, you can really make life miserable for a lot of Japanese attack. But that is going to take a perfection in defense, and that's something that the United States really hasn't shown to me that they have the ability to do yet. But you know, hey, look, they've got time in camp, and that's something they can look to manage as they, you know, move forward in the game this weekend.
Excuse me. Yeah, you know, so I think the biggest thing when you're looking at, you know, some statistics, kicks from the hand, USA versus Japan, same over the course of Japan's 2 matches. They really need to kick against, Japan has had 1 match, excuse me. They really need to kick against Canada. So same kicks from hand, but if you look at the meters, 831 meters to the Eagles, 366. Clean breaks were just about the same. Here's the difference. Japan having a 2-to-1 ratio of defenders beaten. That's Canada not making their tackles. And what, you know, an issue we always talk about is the Eagles and doing their tackles and making sure they're complete. So I think it's going to be a tough match. I think we can keep it close. I don't think it's going to be, knock on wood, a blowout like it was against Canada. But again, we have to make sure that we keep turnovers down and we keep those penalties conceded down, especially in our end.
And you got to watch out for the back three.
Absolutely.
They can flat out fly. Tawatama is a former All Black. Dylan Riley, and I forgot the name of their number 14, but man, those guys have absolute gas. So you got to contain those fellas.
Absolutely. Guys, we're going to go around the horn real quick. I want you guys to let me know what you think your final score prediction is. Jake, we'll start with you.
I'm going to say they hold them better than Canada did. And I'm going to say the offense is probably going to be relatively similar. I think we're looking at something 42-23-ish, where they get – it's close for about 60 minutes. And then, like Hammer said, you know, tier one fitness tends to be a little bit different. You're going to see that drop off. Maybe they get a couple tries late. But I think for about 60 minutes, you'll see a game before it ultimately ends with a less flattering scoreline.
Hammer, do you have a score in mind?
Yeah, as much as I would like to be super optimistic and say that the United States can squeeze a win out of this weekend, just in watching Japan, they're just so damn clinical, like I said before. And I'm going to put it at, 17, Japan by 17. I think they're like Jake said, it's not wrong to think we can keep it close for a little while, but you give them a try or two on the hoof and boy, it's really going to be tough to come back and close that gap.
Absolutely. I think I'm right there with you with that 17 two converted tries and a penalty. I think the line is 21 in favor of Japan, but, you know, minus three for home field, it's really 18. So if we can cover the spread, if we can get that 17, I like that. I like those odds. I like those odds. Guys, you know, episode 184, done and dusted. My glorious re-debut back on the rant. Jake, thank you again so much for coming out, and hopefully we'll see maybe some blogging in the future. If you are interested in becoming a blogger and writing for us, hit us up on social media, rugbyrantpod.com, therugbyrant.com, themlrrant.com, me and Hammer personally. Go to therugbyrant.com to check out all of our latest blogs, links to our merch, all that fun stuff. And if you're on Shop MLR, use MLR Stats as a code. Shout out to our boy, James Dealey. Guys, episode 184, done and dusted. We'll see you guys at the next.
See ya. Cheers.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at ohiovoterguide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.